Welcome to the Physics Teaching Podcast, a podcast for teachers of physics made by physics teachers.
Made by physics teachers like me. I'm Robin Griffiths. I'm a full-time teacher of physics all the way through from year 8 to year 13.
And I'm Thomas WP, a part-time A-level mostly physics teacher. And at the moment, I'm teaching waves and sound with my year 7s, which is great.
Oh, lovely. Year 7's waves and sound. That's just a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of fun, and a lot of noise, I'm guessing.
Yeah. With me, certainly. But I was a bit shocked when I looked at the scheme of work. And in the first lesson, I had to do superposition.
Oh, my goodness.
Year 7.
Wow.
And when I looked at the test, it had compression and rarefaction.
Gracious. Oh, okay. Right. Well, okay.
What's happened to Year 7 physics teaching in the 5-10 years since I taught Year 7 Bazaar? I think that I'm not a huge fan of this scheme. I'm sure people will recognise it.
Yeah, that's slightly strange, isn't it? I don't know how I feel about that. I'm trying to think. I wonder if our dear listener has a view on sort of introducing some quite complex terminology early on. I'm sure this sort of understanding of what a compression and a rarefaction is, or what both of those things are, isn't beyond a year 7, but it's just those are some quite hefty words to put on them, aren't they?
They are, and I had to do longitudinal and transverse as well, and you know, this is year 7s, and there's 5 lessons to do all of sound. So for me, that's a challenge, and I might see if I've got time to drag it out a bit. Anyway, we don't digress, because this lesson is about the International Year of Sound, but we'll come back to that later, for we have an announcement about our trip to America.
Yes, our trip to America, which we had planned, we were going to go and speak at the NSTA conference, and then the NSTA conference came back to us and said, yeah, great, that'll be $800, please. We said, no, we're speaking at the conference. And they said, no, that's $800, please. So, we then said, oh, but we're just a couple of broke physics teachers, and we haven't heard from them again, have we, really?
Yeah, we had a bit of a dialogue, and we said, well, can we do a day registration, because we can just about afford that? And we have already booked our flights at this point, naively. I mean, read the small print. I mean, caveat emptor. I'd feel embarrassed, really. So I'm not sure whether we're on the program or not. I think we're probably off. And if any of our dear listeners knows anyone at the NSTA, could they please see what's happening? Because we are coming to Boston. We'll teach for food. We'll probably arrange a meetup with us and Patrick Kaplow somewhere in Boston whilst we're there. But I don't think we'll be at the conference.
Well, no, it is a shame. I mean, I've had lots of people who did offer to pay for the conference fee, provided I didn't come back. But unfortunately, nobody sort of agreed to stump up the money. But, you know, we're going to be over there, and we're really looking forward to it. If you're in the New England area and you fancy a meetup, let us know. And we'll do a live podcast face-to-face, which would be lovely. So we're going to meet up with PK, aren't we, and go and teach a lesson at his school in our bowler hats, looking like Thompson & Thompson.
Yeah, I've never taken mine off, have I? Ever?
Oh, absolutely,
never.
Yeah.
Never.
You wear it permanently, yeah.
Yeah. But I do wear a bow tie nearly every day, so, you know, I am a bit stereotypical in that respect.
Yeah, so we'll have to get you a Stars and Stripes bow tie to visit the America.
Oh, I'd love that.
That would be good, wouldn't it?
I'd love that.
Absolutely.
So, yes, we don't think we'll be appearing at NSTA, which is a great shame, and we would have enjoyed that. I have no problem with them charging, and I do have a problem with me not reading the small print. I mean, I really do feel embarrassed about it.
Well, it is what it is, and that's the thing. And I gather it's quite standard practice with these conferences. So, no sort of a bad feeling against the NSTA. Wonderful organisation, and just very sorry it didn't work out this time. Hopefully, next time we can sort it out and work it out.
We can sort it out. Yeah.
And maybe
sorry NSTA. Well, we love
this
you.
This is it. So maybe go to the AAPT conference instead or something.
But there is an American flavour to the podcast today, because it's the International Year of Sound. And listener Andrew Morrison from Joliet College in Illinois, he contacted us, contact@thephysicsteachingpodcast.com, and said we should talk to Keita Jones from the Acoustical Society of America, the ASA. And Robin and I managed to hook up with her, and we had a fantastic chat about the International Year of Sound. Welcome to the podcast, Keita. If you'd like to introduce yourself.
Yes. Thank you for having me. My name is Keita, and I am the Education and Outreach Coordinator for the Acoustical Society of America.
Already, I love that there's an Acoustical Society of America. That is great. So tell me, what is the Acoustical Society of America all about, Keita? What does it do?
Yeah, so the Acoustical Society of America was actually founded in 1929. So we've been around for quite a bit. And I have basically memorized our statement of purpose, which is to generate, disseminate, and promote the knowledge and practical applications of acoustics. And what I like to say kind of more generally is that ASA brings together anyone and everyone who's doing any kind of work with sound and vibrations. So you have some folks that are specifically interested in the hearing mechanisms, some that are more interested in the speech production. You have some folks that are interested in architectural acoustic spaces, some folks that are researching instruments and how we perceive music, all the way to what we need to do about how much noise there is and how we can protect ourselves from that noise. And that's really just a very small sample of what ASA is.
Wow. That's a heck of a brief, though. There's a lot going on there.
Yes.
So the International Year of Sound, is that an Acoustical Society of America thing, or is that something the Acoustical Society, or the ASA, is leaping on and promoting?
So this is actually the founding members of the International Year of Sound. This was really all kicked off by the International Commission for Acoustics. They really took the lead in establishing the International Year of Sound 2020. And then we, ASA, really wanted to support that mission. So ASA jumped on board. The European Acoustics Association also jumped on board. And the International Institute of Acoustics and Vibration and the International Institute of Noise Control and Engineering. So there's quite a few kind of founding members.
Wow.
But there's actually acoustical societies and organizations kind of for each country around the world that have since really jumped on this same international campaign, and they're supporting it in their own countries and in their local areas. So, for example, the German Acoustical Society is doing a bunch of things as well.
Okay, so I'm a teacher in the UK. I'm actually teaching sound to my 11-year-olds as we speak. I did the introductory lesson on Monday. So my next lesson is about sound as a vibration.
Mm-hmm.
So what can the ASA do to support me in that mission?
Yeah, this is one of ASA's kind of foundational works in terms of outreach. We really do want to help educators bring acoustics into the classroom. And we understand that a lot of folks are not acousticians and don't have access to the material, or even kind of the background to the fundamentals of acoustics. So what ASA has done is we've actually created lesson plans. They're very easily accessible lesson plans that are free to any educator. And the lesson plans incorporate everyday objects. So things like ping pong balls and straws or even just yourself. So because we as humans produce sound and vibration specifically. And so you can put your hand on your throat and feel your vocal folds vibrating when you talk. And so we've collected a bunch of these lesson plans and provided those for teachers to use in their own classrooms and to really expand from those lesson plans and use them in their own classroom in the way that works best for them.
I love anybody who says they've got a resource going, because that is fantastic. So these are presumably available on the website, and anybody can go along from around the world and log in. That's
exactly
great.
Exactly.
Fantastic.
So what would the website be?
Yes, the website that I would encourage anyone, all educators and really anyone that's interested in learning more about the science of sound or acoustics, is to go to exploresound.org. And that's kind of ASA's outreach site. That's where we put all of our educator resources and our student resources, because we have those as well. And there's a tab at the top that actually is specifically for educators. And we've collected all of our ASA lesson plans, supplemental materials, and even additional materials from our partners and other folks that we work with.
Brilliant. I'm literally, as we speak, trying
to get it. Me too. The ping pong ball and the tuning fork is a huge hit. I can just imagine that.
Yes.
Wow,
now,
this looks great.
I will briefly mention, we have an ASA teacher activity kit. It's currently on a hiatus. It's out of stock right now. We're rebuilding it and deciding what we want to do with it and how we might change it for the future. And that kit is also available for free. And the kit comes with a set of tuning forks. It comes with ping pong balls. It comes with some posters of the inner ear and things like that.
And it's available internationally. We just had to pay the shipping.
Yes.
This is extraordinary. This is a wonderful site, isn't it?
Free resources, Robin.
I know.
Free resources.
Teachers, the only thing as far as we're concerned that is better than free resources is free stationery. We're just absolutely there on this. We just love this. So this all looks great. And I would say, listeners to the podcast, get yourself over to have a look at this because it is a wonderful thing. And I wanted to ask you, Keita, presumably, your society, it must have members who are musicians, members who are physicists, members who are engineers. It must be an eclectic mix, right?
Oh, yes. Our members range far and wide. We have, just as you mentioned, we have physicists and musicians, but we also have the combination of those two, right? We have musicians who are also physicists. And one of the fun things about our meetings, because we do two meetings every year that bring together, nearly 2,000 folks to talk about acoustics. And so we have research sessions going on where people are just talking about what kind of acoustics research they're doing and the results of their studies. But also we have a lot of more on the art side of things. One of my favorite things that we do is an ASA jam where our members bring their musical instruments and we reserve a space and invite everyone to come and play together as scientists and musicians. And they get up there and play and sing. And it's a wonderful thing. And we also pass out hearing protection because hearing is also very important for our own jobs and for what everyone is doing. So we also want to be mindful of not having too much noise exposure, but still enjoy music.
That's just fantastic. I love the sound of it. It's funny, Thomas and I used to joke when we worked together that we should have put together the physics band because we always seem to have a wonderful collection of musicians in the physics A-level classroom. And it does seem to be something that goes together. There's an appeal between physics and music.
Exactly.
And clearly this link between physics and sound that I think will really capture the imagination of lots of students. And it's a lovely way to do it. Tell me, is there a sort of a section of the site that we could look at in terms of careers? Because one of the things I always find quite difficult with students is sort of illuminating what sort of careers, but just listening to you talk, you realize there's a huge range of jobs that literally just to do with acoustics that you could follow. Is there any careers advice on your side?
That is a wonderful question, and I'm glad you asked it. So we actually have a section on Explore Sound that is basically kind of a meet acousticians and see what are acousticians doing. And some of these acousticians they don't always have the title of acoustician, similar to how folks who might be doing physics work don't always call themselves a physicist, right?
Yeah.
And so if you go to I'm just looking at the website myself, there's the Meet Acousticians, and we have profiles for several acousticians, and it goes kind of as a question of, how did you get into acoustics? What kind of work do you do? And things like that. And then there's also just under the what is acoustics, because this is a question that many people have. When they hear the word, they don't necessarily know what it is. They might have some linkage to music, sometimes architecture, but we also have hearing scientists and noise consultants and architects who focus on sound. So we actually have a list of other things that acousticians might be called.
I was just scanning through this and I found my new hero, and his name is Sam H. Ridgway. He's the president of the National Marine Mammal Foundation in San Diego, California, and is known as the father of marine mammal medicine. There you go. And and again, an acoustician. Who would have known? That's fantastic, isn't it? Fellow of the Acoustical Society of America for his pioneering work on marine mammal hearing. Brilliant.
That's one of my favorite Some of my favorite acousticians to talk to are bioacousticians. So this is what Sam is, for example. So working with animals and the sounds that animals produce, but also how sounds have an impact on animals. So we're creating a lot of noise now from shipping and travel in the ocean. And that's changing how, for example, whales are behaving underwater.
Yeah, and all of this, it's just, this is great, isn't it? So, Thomas, I can feel, you know, just in my classroom, being able to just put some career profiles and say, look, just in the field of sound and acoustics, these are some of the jobs that people do. These are some of the things that physics can open doors for you. It's great, isn't it?
Yeah, it's absolutely fantastic. And right, we did an episode about that, didn't we, about careers with NU STEM. I've been very distracted, I'm afraid, because I was looking through your materials and I saw materials not supplied in the kit, raisins and pasta. And I'm thinking, how do you use raisins and pasta to teach about acoustics?
So this is a really simple activity. You don't need our kit whatsoever. The raisins and pasta go together on their own. So what you do is you have pieces of spaghetti, usually is the best one. Other kinds of pasta probably won't work, and you'll see why. What you do is you take the spaghetti pieces and you break them at three different points so that they're different lengths. And then what you do is you stick a raisin at the end of it, or a small marshmallow, kind of like the ones you use for hot cocoa or something. And then you can hold those three pieces of spaghetti and get them to vibrate or resonate at different rates, even though you move your hand at one speed. Cool. And the idea here is that the different lengths of the pasta are going to represent things like frequency, right? So shorter wavelengths compared to longer wavelengths.
Right? Yeah, cutting it, because no one can see me. I'm sitting here holding my biro, and I'm holding it at different lengths and wiggling my hand. And if you get the length bang on, you have resonance, don't you? And it flicks massively because it's resonating. But if you move your fingers a tiny bit, the pasta just goes up and down. Love it.
Precisely. Love it. And that's the only, there's kind of a trick to learning how to do it. But once you get it down, it's quite an easy demonstration to show students. But of course, with these kind of things, it's really nice to get that experience into their hands and let them work it out and feel what's happening.
Yeah, it's clever. I'm just thinking of the pencil as well. Yeah, look at that. There we go. Sorry.
Yeah. Great. For, look at that. Brilliant for a podcast. Excellent.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's all to do with sound. All to do with sound and vibrations. Oh yes.
So, Keita, what's your role in all this? I've just seen your picture on the website. You're driving all this, are you?
So yeah, my role, as you know, my title, education and outreach coordinator. Unsurprisingly, do quite a bit of coordinating. So I make sure that a lot of these programs and initiatives take place and that they don't go away. But also a big part of what I do is try to interact with the education community and see what they need and want from experts, right? So oftentimes, and what I've found in my 3 years with ASA is that teachers need the materials. Often they do have the wherewithal and the ability, but fitting it into their pre-existing curriculum might be hard if they have to do it all themselves from scratch, right? So we try to develop these lesson plans that they can fit in wherever they like. And what's nice about acoustics is that it's very multidisciplinary, and so you can fit it in lots of different places. So that's a big part of what I do. But then also I interact and do science demonstrations with the public for ASA. So we invite students to come to our meetings and we do science of sound demonstrations with them. And we teach them some of the physical properties of acoustics in various ways, whether that's using rubber bands or springs and slinkies and string, or 3D printed models of the larynx so that we can look at how speech is actually produced. So we do a lot of that, and I love that part. I love interacting and getting a chance to actually teach kids something that they might not know and something that can really inspire them to look more into it when they leave our little, 1 hour session.
So you are a physics teacher, Keita. You are a physics teacher. You're on the right podcast. And be a teacher for me. Help me out here. What is an acoustician? You said people don't know what it is. I'm sitting here thinking, I don't know the actual definition of that. I could have a stab. But what would you say an acoustician is?
So for me, an acoustician is somebody who is interested in and studies vibration and sound, and or sound. I say or because some folks are interested in vibrations, for example, that humans can't hear, right? So we don't want to just limit it to sound, because often when we hear the word sound, we think of what humans can hear. I mean, we've all probably played with a dog whistle and not really been able to hear the sound that the dog whistle produces. So that's a vibration, but not a sound that humans can hear. So that's generally the definition that I use. But I also like to fall back on this idea that an acoustician might not call themselves an acoustician. And so what it is from person to person varies. And that's kind of the good and the bad of it. You might find someone who does something that's very much what someone else does, that they call themselves an acoustician, but someone else calls themselves a physicist, right?
Well, that makes sense to me. I see what you're saying, because it's kind of perhaps genuinely you work with a multidisciplinary field. You have lots of things in your job and lots of things, but some of it is to do with perhaps soundproofing, perhaps vibrational things going on in something that you're designing. And so, yeah, you know, you're using acoustic principles there.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine designing the interior of a car, there's a hell of a lot of acoustics going on there, which is some of it's not audible, but it's keeping down vibration in the car and reducing road noise, I would think, and reducing resonance in the car at different speeds and all that stuff. And that's all acoustician, isn't it? I would hope.
Right. Yeah, and that's so we have lots of engineers in our society, for example, and they're doing a lot of this kind of work in terms of where is all of this vibrational energy going? Some of that is, if you've worked in an office space, this kind of low hum drum of the heating and cooling units, right? And there's research that shows that that's not great for humans to constantly be in that kind of listening environment. And so we need folks to look at how can we reduce that sound. And so you have engineers working with architects to see the best way to lay out a space and what they can do to reduce the vibration from the heating unit, or in your own home, how to make sure your washer and dryers are quiet. And we know that this is something that people want because it's advertised on commercials, right? Like, we have the quietest washers and dryers, or the quietest dishwashers, right?
Yes, I remember having one of those ones, and I had to open it up to repair. It was a dishwasher, and I had to open it up to repair it. And I realized that when they sold it as the quietest on the market, all they'd done, they'd stuck some rock wool on the inside, basically, to dull it. That was pretty much right. The extent of it. I was thinking, crikey, but I suppose, you know, if it works, it works. Yeah, that's fair enough.
Sometimes the simplest solution is the best solution, but not always.
Yeah, that's true. But I'm loving looking through the website. Loads of great resources there and loads of great things. I've just been grubbing into one of the lesson plans on the Doppler effect. And there's worksheets and there's suggestions and there's a whole plan for your lesson there if you're teaching the Doppler effect. And, of course, that comes up in all sorts of areas of physics, in redshift and various other ways that you want to the kids to appreciate Doppler effect and what it means. So, again, yeah, you're absolutely right. There's loads of areas of your physics where there's some ready-made lesson resources right there for you on the Explore Sound website. Brilliant.
And looking at the kit you can get from the ASA, I would say most secondary schools would have most of that stuff kicking about. So you could actually just dive in and get the lesson plan. So it just looks excellent.
Yeah, so, that was something the members of the Education and Acoustics Committee, they really wanted this to be a kit that anyone could use to make it very low cost. And really, if you don't have the kit, you can still do 80 to 90% of the activities.
Great. So to wind this up, because we don't have long on the podcast, what can we as physics teachers do to support and promote the International Year of Sound?
That is a wonderful question. So the main thing that I can say that physics teachers can do for the International Year of Sound is we actually have a International Year of Sound student competition. So this is, it's called the Sound of the World, and it's a competition for primary, middle, and secondary schools from all over the world. So it really doesn't matter where you are, you can take place in this. And there's two categories. And basically we're asking kids to write lyrics to a song. The International Year of Sound has a song. So we'd like everyone to take a chance at writing their lyrics to it. And there's another category, which is to make some hand-drawn pictures or drawings or patchwork or really any kind of art, generally 2D art, that the song inspires you to make. Because the thing about the International Year of Sound is that it's not just about the science or the physics of sound, because sound is also something that's very human and very social. And so we want people to take a moment to really enjoy the sounds of life and the sounds that are around us and be inspired by that.
What a beautiful way to end the interview. Well, thank you very much, Keita. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on. And I wish you all success for the rest of the year. That's another 10 months to go.
Yes.
So thank you very, very much.
It's been great, Keita. Thanks ever so much. Wonderful to open sort of some new ideas and resources and some new thinking on acoustics for physics teachers around the world. And hopefully that will get just into a few more classrooms in front of a few more. And they'll be the acousticians of the future.
Yes, that's great. What we're really hoping for.
That's brilliant. Thanks ever so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, I really enjoyed that. She was a fantastic character.
Absolutely. Wasn't it great? And just it opens such a great vista. It's just there's probably nothing on there that you haven't taught before, but it's all sort of collected under that umbrella. There's career resources. There's all sorts of things. What a joy that website is to have a quick tour around. It's great.
Yes, I think it's worth repeating the website, www.exploresound.org. And I really like the simplicity of the demos that, you know, it just appeals to me that it's cheap and it's easy and it's accessible. And I enjoyed her talking about voice boxes. It reminded me of physics in the news a few weeks ago. Did you see that?
I did.
It was a brilliant headline in The Guardian, "Talk like an Egyptian."
Yes. Yes, we see what they did there. Very nice. And it was this thing that they...
It is a low-hanging fruit, isn't it?
It is.
Low-hanging fruit.
It is. You do love it also when the broadsheets manage to get in what is effectively a red-top headline, and they just feel so pleased with themselves, don't they? They love it. I mean, and it was this story that they'd found an Egyptian mummy, and by looking at x-rays and scans, they'd managed to recreate the larynx of the Egyptian mummy. And whilst they couldn't do anything to work out what this mummy may have sounded like when they were alive, they could work out roughly what sort of vibrational sound that their larynx made.
Yeah, they made a 3D model of it, didn't they?
Yeah, so they did a sort of 3D printer model of the larynx and then blew some air through it. You know, you remember that bit in Jurassic Park where they have the larynx of a velociraptor and they're blowing through it and this sort of thing. It's similar to that, but of course when you just push air through your larynx, oh, that's all they've got. So
it was funny. They have the audio on the website and I was listening to that, expected to hear it say something in ancient Egyptian language, and all you get is
it's great. It sounds like ancient Egyptian odd job from Goldfinger, basically. That's all you got. That was it. So yeah, rather nice, but slightly interesting. But yeah, sort of the idea of vibration and vocal cords and things like that, which is all very good.
I think for the listener we should just have a pause and I'll play in here the actual sound. So there you go, Robin. That's exactly what an ancient Egyptian sounded like.
Yes. it's something very sort of weird about it. And I remember I heard it on Radio 4, and I think, I don't know who it was, but it was somebody very, you know, the people on the Today programme are like, I wouldn't want to use the word pompous, but it's not far off, you know, they're very, very sort of stiff shirt and all the rest of it. And I think it was Justin Webb, and they played it to him, and he clearly just had a moment where he had to pull himself together and go, oh, right, okay. And yeah, it was, not quite as impressive as you might be led to believe.
No, but it does link back. I mean, what you said about careers, and you think the number of careers working with sound and vibration is staggering.
Yeah, absolutely, and it comes in, and it's so important in so many different areas. And I mean, I think we've all shown that picture. I can't remember the name of the bridge in America where they got it wrong, and they basically
Tacoma Narrows.
That's the one, Tacoma Narrows Bridge, where it just shook itself to pieces basically because they didn't understand the idea of resonance and how the I guess the idea of modelling to scale before they built things, but.
No, and the problem was it not understood, couldn't have been understood, and wasn't explained till the 80s, until they modelled it in a computer. Oh. And there were effects that were unexpected. It's a fascinating story, that. And we will put the video in the show notes, because that's a real standard if you're teaching about resonance. Brilliant video. The poor dog, the one casualty, the dog that was too terrified to leave the car.
Oh, bless. Poor old Fido. But it's a really interesting thing. And of course, there are people who work on that now. And even more recently, the Millennium Bridge, isn't it? And famously on the Thames had resonance problems when they opened it first. And
it did. It's another great teaching thing, the Millennium Bridge, because when you walk across it now, you see these enormous shock absorbers, which they must have had to tune quite carefully to make sure it stopped the bridge from resonating. And when people walk naturally, you naturally walk in step, don't you?
Yes, that's right, yeah. And this is the thing about soldiers having to break step when they cross bridges and all these sorts of things. But all of that and all that engineering to do with how to build bridges and how to build the shock absorbers and all that's all to do with vibrations and damping and resonance and those sorts of things. And again, that's all what the Acoustical Society of America is about. And so, yeah, there's a huge range of applications in just that one tiny area of physics. And, of course, that's not unique. Pretty much every area of physics has that range of applications, and that's something we need to get across to our kids, isn't it, to let them know that physics has huge potential.
Definitely, and it reminds me I should be producing careers when I teach this sound stuff to the year sevens. It's one of those subjects with a trap, though, isn't it, because you have to talk about a vibrator.
Yes, I tend to talk about oscillators now.
Oscillators, vibration generators, I say.
Yeah, a vibration generator and oscillation, or yes, absolutely. So you talk about a vibration causes an oscillation. I think that's.
Yeah, nice. Well, Robin, we've had a fantastic talk about the International Year of Sound. I've enjoyed that. I've enjoyed the But let's do a short one this week. We had a long podcast last week, so let's do a short one this week.
Yeah, and I can hear listeners all over the Northern Hemisphere cheering at the mention of that. So I hope you enjoy it, and we'll be back talking much greater length next week, I'm sure.
Don't diss the listeners in the Southern Hemisphere. There's plenty of those.
It's true.
We love you too.
We were the 147th most popular podcast in Peru. Don't think I've forgotten.
We were leaping up the Peru charts recently, and we were on the New Zealand charts.
Ooh.
And that's definitely Southern Hemisphere. Pretty sure. I lived there for a year, so I was pretty sure the sun went the other way.
Yeah, that's good. Okay.
Okay, Robin, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thanks a lot.
As always. Thanks so much, Thomas. See you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Physics Teaching Podcast, and special thanks this week to Keita Jones. The podcast is presented by Robin Griffiths and me, Thomas W.P., and produced and edited by me, Thomas W.P. Thanks for listening, and we'll speak to you next week.